Thank you, Matt. Good morning. I call this regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Service Commission to order. It is just after 10 o'clock on Wednesday, February 2nd. I'm Commissioner Julie Fedorchuk. Present with me are also Commissioner Randy Crisman, and so we have a quorum. Don't have any opening comments today. What's on my mind is the funeral activities of Attorney General Stengem, which begin today in the Capitol, and it's a sad day to have to start saying goodbye to somebody we all appreciated for his work, for his attitude in life, and for his great humor, and for being the friend and colleague that he was. So it's been a tough week and a half in this building, and lots of people are mourning his loss, not the least of whom is his wife, Beth, and his son, Andrew. So we'll be happy to be there with them today to share our condolences and help express our love and appreciation for their loss. With that, Commissioner Crisman?
Well, just to add to that, and share a little personal story. So I got to serve three sessions with Wayne when he was still in the Senate, and then times when I was in the Senate and he was in the Attorney General's office. And of course, our leader during all those years then was his brother Bob. So he was kind of a frequent guest down there in those early morning and late evening meetings. And then our time here where we worked with the Attorney General on a number of cases over the years, and I think just an outstanding public servant in all of his roles. But my wife actually reminded me of just a personal story that I think really tells a lot about Wayne. In 2016, of course, there was the very challenging gubernatorial Republican race in the spring. And I don't remember which day, if it was Monday or Tuesday, right after the state convention was my father's funeral, who, if Wayne ever met him, it would have maybe just been in passing when he was up there for a local district event or something like that. But here at the funeral, here comes Wayne in. And of course, I mean, he just went through this difficult convention. He knows he's into a 2.5 month primary battle, and he drives 70 miles and comes up to Hazen to this funeral, and my wife expressed surprise, and he just said, friends show up for friends.
Yeah.
And that, I think, tells the story of who Wayne Stengem was outside of his job.
Mm-hmm. Very much. What a great story. That's, and everyone has so many of those, which has been, it's been fun to hear them.
Yeah.
And hopefully Beth is able somehow to capture some of those, because these are things she doesn't even know. So,
right.
Things that she wasn't part of, or
and
just little
Andrew,
small things that he did to people all the time. Everybody has their little stories. My favorite one that I've been telling, I'll be telling on the campaign trail is, you know, everyone talks about how he, everywhere he went, it was his hometown. He made some connection to it, which he was really a master at doing. But the other night, Amanda and I said the most egregious example of Wayne's finding a connection to a town that I recall was in the 2014 campaign. We were in Valley City, or it might have been a smaller town outside of Valley City, I can't remember, for a district convention, and he actually claimed the town as his hometown because his dog was from there. Oh, it was great.
Quite
absolutely
a character.
Great. Oh, so anyway, with that, thank you, Wayne Stengem, for all the wonderful memories. All right, let's move on to the business at hand. We have a number of items on consent, along with the approval of the minutes from the January 18th and 16th commission meetings. I move we pass passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. All right, moving into the regular agenda. And three items, none of which we completed last time. Contrary to how I might have remembered it early this morning. I move the commission adopt the order on certificate of site compatibility in Glacier Ridge Wind Farm LLC, Glacier Ridge Wind Farm Project, Barnes County Siting Application, case number PU-16-539.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. So in December of 2016, the commission provided a certificate of site compatibility for phase one of this wind farm with locations for up to 52 turbines and a total generating capacity of just under 180 megawatts. And then on September of 2017, we approved a certificate of site compatibility for phase two of the project for 35 turbines and up to about 120 megawatts of generating capacity. So all in all, it was approximately 300 megawatts that was permitted in this site in 2016 and 2017. Construction of the Glacier Ridge Wind Farm began on December 14th of 2016. In March of 2017, they filed a construction progress report with the commission indicating that they had excavated 19 turbine locations for foundations. So that was back in 2017. This fall, the commission reached out to this company and asked for an update on the status report. And they responded in and reported that the Glacier Wind Farm project had been canceled and construction would not resume. They have decommissioned the project by backfilling all turbine foundation excavations and restoring the site to the condition that existed prior to the beginning of construction. We hired K2 Reclamation Revegetation for an inspection report that stated that the Glacier Ridge Wind Farm site was visually inspected in November, this past November 22nd, and they reported that the 19 turbine sites appear to have been restored to as near as practical to pre-construction conditions as possible, and they recommended that no further action was needed. So based on this information, the commission finds that this first amended certificate of site compatibility, number 51 for the Glacier Ridge Wind Farm, should be revoked.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I do, and I'm really not happy with this project, but I guess I'm bringing it for discussion, kind of, because I'm not really sure exactly what it is that I want done different. And but I don't find this to be the kind of standards that I ever hoped for. So first of all, I'll say, I don't know where the line is on this kind of a project, on these facilities necessarily, whether it's a part of siting or whether it's a part of wind farm decommissioning and reclamation. I'm thinking maybe the line in the sand is whether the facility ever became operational or not. Maybe since this never became operational, it's still siting. I will say that as portfolio holder of decommissioning and reclamation, I would certainly have expected a more thorough evaluation than this. And there's still another year on the contract with K2, but frankly, the contract is such a low amount, I don't know that we could really expect much of an investigation. One of the things that they talk about in their report, in the scope of work, it mentions they're going to perform inspections applying engineering and science principles. And frankly, this looks like little more to me than just driving by and taking a few pictures. Mm. I find nothing in there about doing any digging to measure an amount of topsoil that's on top. There's nothing about interviewing any of the landowners or operators of the land to see how things turned out. I do know from experience in coal mine reclamation that one probably couldn't expect the crop to be the same on these spots as the adjacent spots that weren't dug up in the first year. But really all I can glean from this is the land is not completely sterile, and it's been leveled out. It wasn't blowing. There was some stubble there. But I would have thought, even if the amount was going to be this low, but with a whole nother year, that they would have waited till this summer to see kind of how the crop looks, if it's somewhat comparable. One of these is on some grasslands, and I'm talking to a person with expertise on that subject. I was doubtful about being able to tell, as this implies, that there's similar types of grass species here as in the adjoining land that wasn't disturbed, but was told that, you know, even at that late date, you know, they probably could tell that as long as there wasn't snow cover, and I know out here there wasn't snow cover. But this was November 22nd when they went out there. And really this, on all the other turbines, it's cropped fields. And really all they did is determine that there was stubble there. Something grew. And this is different than coal mine reclamation, where there are strict standards of what the productivity has to be. And they're measurable, because you have bigger tracts of land, and so you can have 80 acres of mined land and compare that with 80 acres of unmined land nearby and really tell something. Well, you can't really do that with something this small. And so since we don't have standards, I really don't know what to do about this, but I do find this an extremely low bar that we just drive out and determine that it's leveled off and something grew. And so I don't know whether this should be pulled back and another look over the course of this summer, or if it's just something that moving forward on construction reclamation that we need to emphasize to our contractors. At least I feel that we're looking for a little more thorough review than what we got here.
Well, I'm certainly open to, you know, specific suggestions. I guess from my standpoint, we don't have those standards, you know, in place where you have to measure the topsoil, you have to prove what kind of crop grew there. I mean, clearly a crop grew, and so, you know, it's not barren land, and the grass also, there is grass growing in the native prairies, so, you know, that's, you know, our standard is as near as possible, or, you know, I think what's included in our permitting is as near as possible to its original condition, you know, so... I mean, if you want to pull it back, Randy, I'm open to doing that and having another conversation with staff. I don't know how much is left in that siting fee to do any additional work. But we can certainly do that. I think it might be, we should for sure do that moving forward if we want to bake in some more standards into the reclamation piece of things so that they know what exactly... we expect of them.
There is a lot of money left in there, unless there are some other outstanding bills that we have to pay other than this contract. But I mean, this was 5-6 years ago, so
right.
I wouldn't think so. But after paying this contract, it's still close to $60,000 in that filing fee. But there's other construction projects too, and so I'm not completely opposed to moving forward with this one, but if that's the case, then I do think I'm going to dig in a little more as we move in the future and see if we can create some kind of standards, as I mentioned, because even a pipeline, there's more surface area if it's long, but it's a narrow area and goes through multiple types of land, and So it's much harder to gauge and compare than a coal mine. But I hope in the future we can work to come up with something a little stricter than this. I found this really loose.
Well, and we don't have, even on the pipeline, you know, we don't, they reclaim it right away. And we don't have standards spelled out there for measuring the topsoil. And it's mostly how things are growing. You know, if the grass grows back, they consider the reclamation to be successful. If the crop, if the land is productive again, it's successful. And if, no, landowner complaints is another big one. And as far as I know, we haven't received any from this, but I do like your idea of maybe baking in some sort of landowner discussion, because that's the ultimate test, really.
I really think, especially with doing a late November review, and yeah. I don't know why they hurried this, why they, the contract, like I say, is open through the end of 2022. They could have reviewed this in the summer when things are actually growing. But if they wanted to just hurry up and move along with a small contract, at least a handful of talks with these land operators, I thought would have been useful. But I'm okay with moving forward on this one, and I'm working for just a review or a work session sometime of what we really expect on these construction contracts in the future, mm-hmm. or we can use this as an example. I'll leave that up to you.
Well, I think that it would apply not just to wind, but to all of our
yeah.
permitting,
yeah.
reclamation. And, you know, we did look at that a few years back because it was even looser, but when we weren't even doing these post-construction inspections, really, by the third party, so... I think that, yeah, another discussion on that is probably in order. So
okay, like I'm that. Okay with this one then.
All right.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. Okay, my second item, I move the commission find the formal complaint filed by the North Dakota Public Service Commission advocacy staff on January 5th, 2022, states a prima facie case, and serve the complaint on the respondent and Public Service Commission Chazen Line Construction Incorporated Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU-21-418.
Second.
Let's see here. So, on October 25th, the Commission received a North Dakota One Call complaint from Ryan Farmer at Kinder Morgan. And this complaint alleges a violation by Chazen Line of the One Call Excavation Notice System by beginning an excavation prior to receiving notice that all facilities in the area have been located or cleared, or the expiration of the cleared by the expiration of the locate period. On October 26th of 2021, Commission staff issued a letter informing Chazen Line of Kinder Morgan complaint and requesting response by November 9th of 2021. As of January 5th, Chazen Line has not responded to this letter. As alleged by Kinder Morgan's complaint, Chazen Line personnel provided an excavation notice with work to begin on October 20th of 2021. As alleged by Kinder Morgan, on October 19th of 21 at approximately 12:55, Chazen Line began excavating while they were performing waterline repair at that location, so it was a day before they were supposed to. No damage resulted from this excavation. Based on staff's investigation, the final operator positive response was registered to the ticket on October 19th of 2021 at 7:01, so it was about 6 hours after Chazen Line had started excavation. So Chazen Line, by beginning an excavation prior to receiving notice that all facilities in the excavation area have been located or cleared, or the expiration of the locate period, has potentially violated the North Dakota Century Code. The respondent must serve an answer to this complaint upon the complainant and the commission within 20 days after service of the complaint, or the commission may deem the complaint to be admitted, and in that case, the commission can impose an appropriate civil penalty of up to $25,000, but at least $500. And that's pretty much sums it all up.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Yes. I'm not just trying to be difficult today either, but this, I think, is a very interesting case that surprises me in a couple areas, and I need to do some research on exactly what the law is and haven't done that yet. But at one time, the pipeline operators were supposed to have the things marked in 48 hours. I believe that was extended to 72 or something. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there's exceptions on weekends or anything like that. But when I've called in locate tickets, mm-hmm. I've sometimes called them in way early, not because I wanted them to wait 8 days, but because I wanted to see those markings in case I needed to deviate from my plan. And so Chazenline calls us in on the 11th and says they're going to start work on the 20th, 9 days out. And, well, then they started 8.5 days out in the afternoon of that day. To me, that pipeline operator that did their marking on the night of the 19th should have had that done multiple days before that. And I think I would have thought more in violation than Chazenline.
Well,
And so, of course, no one's issued a complaint against them yet. But I find doing a proper locate ticket, saying you're going to start 9 days out and then starting 8.5 days out to be a pretty small violation for the pipeline company to be complaining about, too.
I don't disagree, and I was surprised by the timing, too. The challenge with this one is they haven't responded.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so Chazenline, like, respond, and then your response and your factors, et cetera, can be taken into consideration. But just ignoring it isn't appropriate. That's so, like, that's what this does. This gets their attention. I mean, the minimum fine is $500. The maximum fine is $25,000. But, you know, they can respond, and maybe there's no fine at all, but they have to respond. So that's what this does.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. On my final motion, I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement and Public Service Commission McLaughlin Construction Company Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU-21-435.
Second.
So on October 15th, McLaughlin personnel contacted, that's of 2021, McLaughlin personnel contacted the North Dakota One-Call Notification and provided an excavation notice for work to begin on October 20th of 2021, and the type of work was drilling piers for decks. The expiration date for the ticket was November 10th of 2021. On November 23rd of 2021, McLaughlin began an excavation while drilling holes for deck piers at the location cited in the excavation notice. As a result of this excavation, damage was caused to 702's 24-strand optic cable. 702 stated that the cost of the damage was approximately $500, and four customers were affected by the incident. The complaint alleges a violation by McLaughlin of North Dakota Century Code for using a location for more than 21 days after the planned excavation date. Having investigated the alleged violations, advocacy staff believes that McLaughlin violated North Dakota Century Code. McLaughlin and advocacy staff engaged in good faith settlement discussions, resulting in a consent agreement intended to avoid further administrative proceedings or litigation. Under the agreement, McLaughlin agrees to be assessed a civil penalty of $1,000 with $500 suspended on condition that McLaughlin commits no further violation of the Century Code, of the North Dakota One Call within 5 years of the date of the order accepting the consent agreement. So with that, you know, this was a case where they called in, got the ticket. They began digging about, let's see here, 13 days after the ticket expired. They've worked with staff. Presumably they recognize what they did wrong, have come into a consent agreement that has a $1,000 penalty with $500 suspended, and they'll remit the $500. And hopefully will not commit no further violations, in which case the other $500 will go away. Otherwise, they'll have to pay that too if they have any more violations within 5 years.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
This time I got nothing.
Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. Randy, you're nothing if not thorough.
Well, taking note that if Brian were still here, almost everything would be his portfolios today.
Yeah. Right, what would we be doing?
I know. So I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Northern States Power Company, Advance Prudence, for Repowered Wind Projects application, case number PU-20-425, and in Northern States Power Company, Advance Prudence, 120 megawatt Northern Wind Facility application, case number PU-21-93.
Second.
On October 13th of 2020, in case PU-20-425, NSP filed an application seeking advance determinations of prudence for the repowering of four NSP-owned wind generation facilities, those being Border Winds, Grand Meadow, Nobles, and Pleasant Valley. Then on March 2nd of 2021, in case number PU-21-93, NSP separately filed for an advanced determination of prudence to purchase the repowered and expanded 120 megawatt Northern Wind facility. On May 5th, the commission consolidated the cases. On September 23rd, NSP and advocacy staff filed a settlement agreement and joint stipulation intended to resolve all the issues in both cases. But along the way, and I'm going to address the four repowerings first, that's PU-20-425. Border Winds is a 150 megawatt NSP-owned facility that's located in Rowlett County here in North Dakota. Grand Meadows is a 100.5 megawatt NSP-owned facility located in Minnesota. Nobles is a 201 megawatt NSP-owned facility located in Minnesota. And Pleasant Valley is a 200 megawatt NSP-owned facility that's also located in Minnesota. So it's just the Border Winds that's in North Dakota. NSP testified that the repowering projects will increase the net capacity factor and decrease the levelized cost of energy, and that the projects are expected to qualify for production tax credits, and that's a huge part of the evaluation. Advocacy staff undertook an independent analysis and recommended that we approve Grand Meadows and Nobles, but that we deny Border Winds and Pleasant Valley. The math just came out differently. NSP provided an updated economic analysis after that of Border Winds and Pleasant Valley in light of a subsequent decision they made to delay the commercial operation date on those two, on Border Winds and Pleasant Valley. So advocacy staff updated their analysis based on NSP's revised commercial operation date and then testified that the projects would then reduce revenue requirements in both the near and long term, and recommended that we approve all four of the repowering projects with that changed commercial operation date. Then in the other case, 21-93, that's that acquisition. Again, Northern Wind consists of two separate projects and they total 100 megawatts. And advocacy staff conducted their own independent analysis of that project and testified that NSP's cost of owning Northern Wind would be higher than if NSP just purchased the same amount of energy in the market. And so based on this analysis, advocacy staff recommended that we deny the request for an ADP for Northern Wind. So in this joint order, advocacy staff has recommended that if the commission approves any of the repowerings or the acquisition, it should be limited to the total cost recovery of what NSP identified in their application, and that we would require NSP to provide North Dakota customers with the full realization of each facility's eligible PTCs. The approval of the settlement agreement basically follows those recommendations. It grants the advanced determination of prudence for the four repowerings and states that our North Dakota customers will not be responsible for absorbing any material contract modifications, and that North Dakota customers will receive their full share of the PTCs and the renewable energy credits. But the settlement agreement also states that NSP will not pursue the ADP on Northern Wind project unless the commission grants full recovery of Northern Wind in some future proceeding. But NSP will be entitled to recover the system average cost of fuel from North Dakota customers through the fuel cost rider for the generation provided by the Northern Wind project.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Just a couple things. So we started this a long time ago, last summer, and it was sort of disappointing that it took so long to get to this point. But it was the company spent from August, when we had the hearing in September.
Or was it early consolidated October? The cases in May. The four repowerings, that actually started in October of 2020.
No, but when did we have the hearing on this case?
I think it was in September.
September
23rd.
Yeah.
No, that's when they filed the settlement agreement. I don't recall the hearing date.
Anyway, we had a hearing last fall on this, and in that process, it was a hearing on the settlement, I think, so.
Yes.
It must have been after that. The our staff, not advocacy staff, but the commission staff asked for some additional information from the company to help us better evaluate what the cost benefit of not doing it or not doing any of it would have been. And it took them until like mid to late December to file that information. And so that information really didn't provide any direction that would contradict what the conclusions of the settlement were. So it's appropriate to move forward with this settlement. But I will say, you know, it's really hard to get our hands around the real costs of providing electricity service to customers anymore, because there's so many different pieces to the puzzle, this being, you know, a good example. It's repowered wind projects. When the company modeled them, they had a benefit of something like $250 million based on in customer savings. No, it was their analysis showed $224.6 million in savings generated by the wind repowering projects. And then they modified that based on our advocacy staff to assume market energy as a replacement wind force rather than just a generic wind price. And just that change resulted in almost $75 million less in savings. And so, just like anything, you can get numbers to prove whatever you want. It feels like, and so I really tip my hat to our advocacy staff for digging in on these things and asking and requesting that the company look at things in these different ways so we can do our very best to try to get, you know, a real sense of the costs and what ultimately customers are, you know, going to be paying for, because all of these projects ultimately get recovered by ratepayers. And so I am fine with this project, this settlement agreement. I think it's a good compromise between what the company had wanted and what ultimately advocacy staff has deemed to be the best for customers long term. And so I'm happy to support it. But I do just throw that out there as another example of how, you know, customers keep getting told that rates are going down, but then their rates are going up, and here's why. Because these new projects are not lowering costs. They are cheaper than what might be available if you were to start with a different resource. But they aren't going to be paying less as a result of bringing on new projects. It just doesn't work that way.
You make some really valuable points there, and I just want to add to one of them. It's something you don't know how to really evaluate, but the one thing that's almost a given is that, yes, this is cheaper for the ratepayers if you don't count the other costs that they face, like their taxes. I mean, it's cheaper because the taxpayers are paying for a large part of it, and the ratepayers are the taxpayers. But would just North Dakota decline that and continue to have our taxpayers pay that and just do these elsewhere? And so that's a big dilemma too. And mm-hmm. then, as we've discussed in countless other situations, it's impossible for these companies to operate without being parts of the regional transmission organizations. We continue to, you know, expand and build more of these things. And then when there's congestion, the RTOs require more transmission be built out, and we get the bill for it. And so, yes, this has a, in the very directed sense that we're able to look at in these cases, it's a cost savings, no doubt about it, and I see little choice but to approve them. But in the long run, it's coming back to bite the consumers, both in reliability and cost.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I will say, just to that point, and we talk a lot about this too, but our ability to look at the big picture with the IRPs is going to help us. It's not like a silver bullet solution, but it will help us get a better handle on the trends overall and look at things not just project by project, but the big picture plans, and to provide more serious direction philosophically to the company about where we see things going for our ratepayers.
Okay, next one. I move the commission suspend the rates and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing on Otter Tail Power Company 2022 renewable resource cost recovery adjustment factor rates case number PU-2219.
Second.
On January 5th, Otter Tail Power filed an application to change its renewable resource cost recovery rates. The new rates reflect projected costs through March of 2023 related to investments in Ash Tabula, Langdon, and Maricourt wind projects. Otter Tail proposes to decrease the rider from 11.825% to 7.108% effective April 1st. The effect of the rate change on the bill for a residential customer using 1,000 megawatts per month is a decrease of $3.23 per month. Keep in mind, and this hasn't been my portfolio now, I think Otter Tail is the only one that uses that percentage as opposed to the others that use a dollar amount.
Mm-hmm.
So the issues to consider in this proceeding are whether the investments and associated costs for the resources qualify for recovery, whether the incurred costs are reasonable and prudent, and whether the rate adjustments are consistent with the terms of Otter Tail's tariff. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by March 18th. If deemed appropriate, the Commission can determine the matter without a hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
And last, I move the Commission assess an application fee of $10,000 and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Otter Tail Power Company purchased assets of Ashtabula 3 LLC, Public Convenience and Necessity, case number PU-22-27.
Second.
On January 11th, Ottertail filed an application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity. Ottertail proposes to acquire and operate the existing Ashtabula Wind 3 wind facility, which is a 62.4 megawatt project in Barnes County. Issues to be considered in this matter are whether public convenience and necessity will be served by Ottertail's ownership and operation of the facilities, and whether the applicant is fit, willing, and able to provide service. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting that hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by March 18th, same date. If deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That concludes the portfolio.
Thank you, Randy. All right, moving into announcements this afternoon. At noon, we have our first public input session on the NSP 2021 natural gas rate increase. That's case number PU-21-381. And we have another public input session at 5:30. Those are all virtual, so customers can log in through the PSC website and participate in those public input sessions. They will, in doing so, they will hear a presentation from the company, kind of providing the overview of the rate case, what's driving their requests, and you know, other information that provides background on the case and what they're seeking to do with it and why they're asking for what they're asking for. And then we'll open up for public input from the public. They can express their concerns, their problems, et cetera, with what the company is asking for. I've gotten a fair amount of inquiries about this. I know Stacy has in the office over the course of the last few months with the rising price of gas. I think NSP customers received their bills, a lot of them, over the weekend for this last month. And I know there was some sticker shock that some have expressed. So I anticipate we'll have and hope that we have good participation by the public. It's a good opportunity to both learn what is and isn't included in this, learn more about what's driving the increase in the cost of natural gas service to people's homes, and also tell us how that's impacting you. So I really hope we have dynamic participation by the public. And then later on this month, the other thing that is on the calendar that's probably of interest would be Ottertail Power's renewable resource rider that we'll be reviewing in an informal hearing on February 23rd. Otherwise, I think those are the highlights. Let's see. I guess we will now take a brief recess and then take questions from the public, and then should we go right into the admin agenda after that? Okay. We're in recess.